Mr. Michael Port. The Boston Globe calls Michael Port an uncommonly honest author. The Wall Street Journal calls him a marketing guru. Canada's leading business paper, the Financial Post, declares the world needs more Michael Ports. And I do agree with that. But who cares what others say about him? It's what he's doing for others that matter. He wrote the mega best-selling Book Yourself Solid so that business owners can get all the clients their hearts desire. He then wrote Beyond Booked Solid so that they can stop trading time for money. He wrote The Contrarian Effect, why it pays big to take typical sales advice and do the opposite. I like that. Why it pays big to take typical sales advice and do the opposite so salespeople can respect their customers. And by the way, The Contrarian Effect was selected as the number 9 best business book for 2008. By the editorial board at Amazon.com, which sounds like a pretty huge deal to me, as well as the best sales book for 2008 by 800 CEO Reed. But now Michael is thinking even bigger about his own work and how it will touch people everywhere and ultimately change the world. He finally wrote the Think Big Manifesto. Think you can't change your life and the world? Think again. This is his most provocative book so far. And he wrote it for only one reason, to rally everyone to think bigger about who they are and what they can offer the world. And I'll say that again. To rally everyone to think bigger about who you are and what you can offer the world. The Think Big Manifesto is the handbook for the thinkbigrevolution.com, an online social network that will inspire people all over the world to lead their own personal revolutions. It's free and always will be. No one owns big ideas. So welcome, Michael Port.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
Sure, buddy. And it's been, quite a while since we've been on the phone and a year and a half since we saw each other. How are you doing?
Yeah, but you know, it's been a year since we saw each other, but I feel like it was just yesterday. You know, you have such a spot burned into my brain that I feel like I just saw you yesterday.
I know what you mean. I remember sitting next to you on that bench and just chatting about your time meditating till you're near tears with your knees in pain and, you know, the things that you went through for your own personal growth. And it does seem very recent. Well, mate, I need to know, as the author of the Think Big Manifesto, what's your definition of thinking big?
Well, to me, first thing I want to say is that this is an individual concept. Each one of us must determine what it means to think big. But I'll give you my definition. This is just personal. To me, it is what we stand for, and we think big if we let it guide us in everything we do. And so for me, it's to maintain my integrity in the face of a world that is often filled with slack thinking, lazy habits, and flexible principles.
Mm.
And to imagine the possibilities of the world and to go out and do them, whatever it is, build a business, green the environment, fall in love, run a marathon, learn how to cook. The list never ends. And it's a personal thing, but it's also a global thing. And it's not about accumulating. Right? This is not the Donald Trump pseudo-big way of thinking. This is not about more, more, more. It's not about accumulating possessions or fame or friends or influence. It's not about getting rich, although you may reap financial rewards when you do big things in the world. But thinking big is about creating a world of collaboration and cooperation instead of competition. To build a big life in which more is accomplished with others than could have been dreamed of separately. And look, David, know this. If you think about it, if you just think about it for a second, nothing great, nothing transformative, nothing that ever shaped the common good and inspired others has ever happened except by big thinking. So this means thinking instead of why me, we need to think why not me.
Well, I just needed to take a breath when you said that. That's confronting.
Well, you know, this is a confronting book. It's provocative.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much everybody who reads this at some point is going to be confronted. And it's not me that is confronting, but we are confronted with our small thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to touch on something you said about flexible principles. You're in a world of flexible principles. Because when, you know, this book, I see, is largely about integrity. And when people ask me about you or when your name comes up, one of the things that I often say is Michael's a man of integrity. Like, you can just trust what he says. So that's how I see you. And in the back, in your statements of the Think Big Revolution, you talk about integrity and not having hidden agendas and like that. Can you speak a little about that?
Sure. You know, I one of the chapters of the manifesto, one of the elements of the code is live in integrity. And then, of course, I put in parentheses, does it need to be said?
That's page 134.
I think it does. I think it's a conversation we need to have. If you look at the world as it exists now, if you look at the troubles that we are having, from war to a devastated economy to the amount of poverty and hunger that exists in the world to the racial inequalities that exist in the world to the gender inequalities that exist in the world. I could go on and on and on. We need to talk about integrity because we need to be congruent in purpose and in action. We need to define the convergence and the coalescence of full self-expression. Mm. So, you know, maybe you've lived, you know, in a maelstrom of conflict and self-inhibition, right? And maybe you've tried to control things as best as you can. But that's thinking small, right? Without considering the context or the content of your consistency in your purpose and action. And just because, you know, we have goals and we stick to them doesn't mean that we're thinking big. You know, if our goals are to stay out of trouble, to keep our head down, to raise no eyebrows, or to get through the weeks, you know, until the next paycheck, well, then we're thinking small. We're not doing justice to ourselves or to others. And so thinking big is holistic. It is internal and external congruency. It applies at home and at work, inside your thoughts and out in the world. That is integrity, and it's how we live when we think big.
I would completely agree. I think that whenever we're hiding something, if there's something we're trying to do to someone or there's something we're not coming clean with, it's hard enough when you're thinking small. But when you start thinking big and you're trying to achieve big things in the world, I just think if there are things you're hiding, there's no way you can keep moving forward. You're just going to sabotage yourself because your subconscious is going to be worried about being caught or being found out.
Absolutely. To be without integrity is fundamentally damaging to our ability to think big and to do big things in the world. Mm. So I think we need to stay vigilant against the least downward slide. So, for example, you know, we say, I'll just do this one thing, and then I'll get back to being in integrity. Right?
Yeah.
So don't become politicians, right? You know, our lives, we shouldn't be living in a series of compromises, you know, with the various factions of our world lobbying for attention or energy, right? There are side effects, and the side effects are our future, for one thing, and then, of course, the future of the others around us. You know, George Orwell once said, and I quote, "In a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act." So then I would say, what truths do you tell? And how will your integrity be manifest?
That is so, I've never looked at it that way, but in all the years of personal development I've done, a lot of it is practicing, telling the truth at deeper and deeper levels. And sharing what's going on, even and particularly when you think you're going to lose something. So you're right. In this world, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. I love that.
We have to move away from the idea of guruism. I think this is very, very important if we're to be big thinkers. I think we need to move away from the idea that others are more special than we are. You notice in the manifesto in here, I use we and our a lot. And as I said, I'm the manifesto. Somebody had to rewrite it. But do not mistake me for a guru. You know, for one thing, I am a guru. And for another thing, I've never met a real guru, and neither have you. Guruizing in the way that we have come to do it in America is, I think, a classic example of small thinking. In fact, I think we spend so much time guruizing people that we've fallen into the guru trap. And it's a trap that distorts our view of ourselves by fooling us into believing that we're somehow different, lesser than the guru, that they're special or blessed or whatever. So it's very, very important as a major message in this work for us to realize that we are more similar than we are different. We have different, you know, tastes or personalities. Sure. Different. Sure. But no one has all the answers. And here's the thing I think that's part of the guru trap. I think that it's comforting to imagine that some guru knows all. I think it's comforting to imagine that someone else knows all. But the answers we are looking for are inside us. So together, we explore the questions. And maybe thinking bigger than a complete and radical commitment to change without a guru to hold your hand. Imagine that. So here, it's just you and me and the big community we're building. And I think we're better than any guru any day.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Oh, there you are.
Hey.
Hey.
Good, I'm glad you're back. I hope I covered. Okay, it's a good thing I've done a few of these before.
Mate, you did so great. So the Think Big Manifesto is the book, but tell us about the Think Big Revolution.
Well, the Think Big Manifesto is the handbook to the revolution. And, you know, to some it may seem trite or, you know, even over the top to talk about being a revolutionary and to have a manifesto, right? But, you know, sarcasm and irony is so much easier. Sarcasm and irony is so much easier truly thinking big. And so I think that if we are going to do big things, it needs to be a revolutionary act. So that this manifesto is the roadmap to each individual's personal revolution from small thinking to big thinking. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that word revolution because I think it reflects the mood of many in our country. I mean, for example, Toni Morrison, in 2008, she wrote a letter to the country. Dear country, she said, quote, "This is one of those singular moments that nations ignore at their peril. I will not rehearse the multiple crises facing us, but of one thing I am certain, this opportunity for a national evolution, even revolution, will not come again soon," end quote. That's Toni Morrison. She has been a thought leader for decades. But revolution is more than just a political necessity. It is a personal necessity. And you know, this personal necessity is often a personal empowerment and against some existing deficient or small thinking system. Now, the system, you know, in Toni Morrison's case, you know, she was referring to a whole political system. And it may be as big as that. Or it may be more local, like the system of a family or a job or a relationship structure. But it may just be the way you think about yourself and your capabilities. Changing the way you think about yourself and what you're capable of is a revolutionary act. Now, at first, others may not know about your revolution. It starts inside you. But I think the mistake that we've been making is keeping it silent. I've seen people talk about the silent revolution, the underground revolution that's coming up, that's bubbling to the surface. It is not coming up if it's silent. It may start inside you, and that's how it should be. But this is your time. This is your time to think bigger about who you are and what you are capable of. And then the rest is organic. So as I said, as you start, others will start around you. It's not just about individual thinking, but it is a revolution that will bring us together, closer together. And you don't need to think big alone. I created a social networking platform that is free, called thinkbigrevolution.com. You can go there. You can start your own revolution. You can join revolutions in progress. I've got all sorts of tools for you to spread your messages throughout the world. And it's free. It always will be. We just need a place that will give us a launching pad, a springboard. So what's your cause? What's your mission? What do you want to stand for? That's the question. And the first element of the code in the Think Big Manifesto is about standing for something. Because if you don't stand for something, someone or something is going to stand on you.
That's right. On page 164, you've got the statements of the Think Big Revolution. And the first one is, I will identify what I stand for through a concerted process of self-questioning and exploration to discover my core, the what that is so me. And then the second one is, I will make public what I stand for. Now, if this is all we did, just these two things, that would be, I can see that would be completely life-changing.
It would be. And, you know, the way that I talk about our core is as follows. I think that is the part of our self, the part of us that is indestructible. But it is something that we need to develop through the pursuit of intellectual capacity as well as emotional capacity. So, you know, look, I train in martial arts. I like to be strong. I like to know that I can rise to the challenge when need be. But my strength does not come from outside. It doesn't come from having, big hands or hairy arms, right? It does not come from testosterone. It comes from inner strength, that part of us that is in the center of our being that is indestructible. No matter what happens, you can be hit, you can be called names, you can be abused, God forbid. But ultimately, there is something inside you that is untouchable, that it is pure. Mm. But if we do not have something that we stand for, if there's not something that guides us in what we do, we feel like our core is soft and weak. I want our core to be soft so that it's malleable, but I want it to be hot, like molten lava, that kind of power.
Hmm. Does everyone have the ability to think big?
Absolutely. We can all think bigger. But we just need to stop making excuses for why we don't. It's risky. I'm not smart enough. You know, I don't have the energy, or my family, or my friends, or my colleagues, or whatever will disapprove. I'll be embarrassed, or I might fail. How about that one?
Yeah.
That's the kind of small thing.
On the chat room, Becky says, because you think big and use ethics, they attack you.
Of course. But that is the battle that we are waging. And here's the thing about the Think Big Revolution. It is a one-way revolution. It takes from no one and gives to everyone. So the battle that we have with small thinkers and small thoughts is a battle that gives to them, because winning does not require a loser. If we eradicate small thoughts from our lexicon, from our internal dictionaries, those who are in the power base of small thinking, those who are spreading these messages of small thoughts, will have nothing left to do but become big thinkers. Small thoughts are set to auto-destruct in an entropic cycle, so that the only thing that can happen to a small thinker if they are surrounded by big thinkers is to become one themselves.
Well, for everyone on this call, what's the most important thing that someone can do to think big?
I think the single most important thing you can do to think big is to help others think big. Because you cannot live on a secluded island of your dreams. You cannot live on the secluded island of your dreams. And this revolution is in the tradition, of Plato, our great philosopher, one of collaboration, of politics in the best and most effective sense, not the red and the blue state noise that politics has become known as. It is about one person thinking big and showing family and friends and colleagues and others how to think big, and on it goes. So inspiring others to think big is perhaps the single most important act of any one individual thinking big, because you're going to bring others into the fold when you do it. So you desire above all else to help others, to stand in the service of others as you stand in the service of your destiny.
And practically, how could that look? I mean, what are some examples of someone saying, right, today I'm going to help people to start thinking bigger?
Well, that's a great question. The first thing I would wonder is, how are you supporting those around you? Are you judgmental? Are you picking up a stick instead of a feather to stroke someone with, to lightly tickle them? How are you coming together? How are you supporting the other things that people are doing, specifically day in and day out? If you don't like something, how are you going about changing it? Are you showing up and throwing a fit? Are you, you know, sitting out, you know, in the back, you know, talking smack? Or are you opening your heart and getting involved in what's going on? These are the most practical things you can think of on a daily basis, day in and day out. And what's going to happen is you're going to be very uncomfortable. I am uncomfortable every single day. Half of the day, I think I'm uncomfortable doing what I'm doing. But in order to do big things in the world, we must be comfortable with discomfort. So I joke in the manifesto, I say, if the shoe pinches, it fits. Because anytime you do something that puts you into a situation where you're going to play a little bit bigger, or with people that are playing a little bit bigger, or you're playing with people that don't want you to play big, it's going to be uncomfortable. But the question is, are you willing to be comfortable with that discomfort?
Man,
or did run away?
So timely for me to be hearing you say this, because I do feel like I'm a bit of an island. I work from home.
Yeah.
And the last few weeks in particular, I've been working on something really big. And every day I come up to, some days I feel overwhelmed. I'm like, I can't do this, and this is huge, and, you know, people are just going to say no to me, and this is ridiculous. And I thought there was something wrong. But hearing you speak like this, you're reminding me that, no, it's just that I'm not surrounding myself with people who are also really uncomfortable. So it looks strange.
That's right.
But this is part of the deal. If you're going
this is part of the deal, and there's a balance, right? There's a balance. There's a balance. Look, big thoughts are contagious, but small thoughts are hyper-contagious. They are virulent. And so if we surround ourselves with small thinkers all the time, then we're going to catch this disease, which puts us into a state of dis-ease day in and day out. And so even being around a group of people that hold your hand and tell you it's okay, when you know it is not okay, is small thinking. Someone may seem supportive, but actually, they're playing small. And you're playing small because you're allowing someone to pander to you.
I just realized that what got me into this project that I'm working on was hanging out with big thinkers. And you talk about, in your book, about finding teachers and mentors.
Yes.
Who can hold space for that. And that's exactly what got me here.
Well, there's a section of the code in the Think Big Manifesto that I title Submit to Authority to Become an Authority. Submit to authority to become an authority. And that word authority is often very confronting for us. The idea of authority. How do you submit to authority to become an authority? I mean, I think the future belongs to the learner, not the learned. Not the teachers who have lost their own will to learn. Because to know is not to know anymore. So to think big is to lead through example as a learner. So look, you know, there are many, many folks who call themselves teachers, but they teach by telling others, you know, to do it their way. And that's like a perpetual inertial downward spiral of hierarchical, pedagogical dogma. In other words, I'm better than you, listen to me, this is the only right answer. So that they can only hear the sound of their own voices. But nothing is heard until the ego is transcended. It's not an easy task. So it sounds contradictory that you need to follow rules to be followed. You need to submit to be submitted to. But it only seems contradictory because there are no contradictions. Rather, there is a unity. There is a unity that comes from this principle. Because if we impose parameters on ourselves, we set ourselves free. Outer discipline coincides with inner discipline. There's no private and public you. You are in public who you are in private. And that's what it means to live authentically, as we were talking about. But once we start doing big things, we realize is a contradiction in almost everything we can think of. Every idea that we have, if we think fully through to the end of the idea, or as far as we possibly can, we will realize as soon as we think we know something, we realize we don't know something. The more proficient you become in any discipline, the more you realize you don't know about it. I've been doing martial arts for a long, long, long time. And the more I train, the more I realize I don't know. And the more I question. But that questioning is a very healthy process. And that is very, very important for all of us that are trying to do big things. We continue to question. We continue to ask ourselves, what is the contradiction that I'm not seeing here? And it's often said that great leaders are able to hold contradictory thoughts or ideas in their head at the same time, and not only still be able to function, but be able to do big, big things.
Right.
Thinking big is hard work, right? So submit a little bit to teachers that will not hold your hand and tell you it's okay when it's not okay, will not force you to do it their way, but will walk the path with you.
Hmm. You're a successful guy, right? And you've been successful in you're successful in business. You're a successful author. You're a successful speaker. I know you get $15,000 a speech. And as an actor, and I love telling the story. You told me you were an actor, and I thought, yeah, who isn't? You know, we all are. And I just figured you were one of the 99.9% of actors who don't actually work. But then I think it was a few weeks later, I'm watching Sex and the City. And you come on as Terry Bradshaw's friend. So not an extra, not like a small speaking role, but like a major role in Sex and the City, which just blew me away. I'm like, he really meant it. Like, he's an actor. So you're a hugely successful guy. Is this why people should follow your plan for thinking big?
No, absolutely not. You know, there's a lot of people who, first of all, we have to define success for ourselves, what it means, right? So my a definition for myself of success may be different than yours and different than Julie's and different than Sam's and different than Pete's, etc. So we all have our definition. We also need to, I think, look through the veil of success. Because, you know, it makes sense that, well, yeah, Michael was had a modicum of success as an actor. You know, he was on Sex and the City and Law and Order and Watch and All My Children and blah, 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 and, you know, he didn't have to wait tables, so he was working as an actor. And then he goes into business and does this, and he writes these books, all that stuff. But you know what? It's all a veil. It's all a veil. So I don't think I had a successful acting career at all because I let the small thoughts take control of my mind until I quit. 4 years. I went to graduate school for 3 years at NYU. Then I worked for 4 years as an actor. And I had a modicum of success. I mean, I was working. You know, you can still see reruns from 12 years ago when I was on TV. And I quit because it wasn't happening fast enough. I wasn't getting, you know, the kind of things that I wanted. I wasn't making as much money as I thought I should be making. I wasn't getting the kind of respect when I walked into a room that I thought I deserved. all small thoughts, all ego-driven thoughts. And it took me years of reflecting to look back on that and realize that I didn't quit because, you know, of the reasons I thought I quit, which were, oh, well, the business is silly, you know, there really aren't any good roles, what I want to do is spend my life on a soap opera, blah, 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 blah. All the things that I made up. Who are these people to decide if I should work? What do they know? All of the lies that we tell ourselves. It took me years, and not until I went into business for myself did I really realize that I let small thoughts take control of me in the past. And I still do sometimes. I think it's very hard to avoid not letting small thoughts, you know, take control from time to time. But we've got to go to battle. We've got to fight against these small thoughts. And so I will endeavor to make sure it doesn't happen again in any overwhelming, consistent way. Nobody has all the answers. Nobody will always think big. But most importantly, if we go back to what we started talking about, is the idea of big thinking is full self-expression, period. What does that mean for you? It doesn't mean making $10 million necessarily. It doesn't mean having 3% body fat necessarily. It doesn't mean a lot of the things that we have come to think it means. And we need to unhook ourselves from this sort of media-mediated melodrama that is reality TV. The corporate-controlled, media-dominated, and as I said, mediated environment that, you know, we're getting our information from and our ideas about what beauty is and what intelligence is and what success is, these are made-up worlds. They are not real. But the danger is if we allow them to invade our heart and our souls, they become real.
Mm. Well, let's take a question. We've got a question here on the board from Eddie. He says, and this one's for me, he says, David, what has been your biggest thought so far in your endeavors? And I don't know what my biggest thought has been, but I'll share two that come to mind. One is around this project that I'm working on now, which is I've gone beyond doing everything myself, and now I'm looking at getting corporate sponsors and huge global nonprofits to promote and share in my activities. So my goal is to have the Sierra Club and Apple and Google promoting my next book. So that's really big for me because I can't control it. It's just so huge. And I like what you just said, Michael, about, you know, the media's idea of success. So I'll give you another example of a really big thought for me, and that was that I can attract a woman into my life who truly meets me.
Beautiful.
A woman with wisdom and experience who I'm not teaching and I'm not training, but someone who really, really meets me. And that was a life-changing thought for me.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. And Michael, there's a question for you from Yvonne. Do you ever notice how the small thoughts aren't yours? Like when I think, where did that come from? It's not something I made up.
Where does it come from? It's not something I made up. Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I mean about, you know, this virulent aspect to small thoughts or any kind of thoughts for that matter. There's not a lot that, exists in our brain the moment we're born. I mean, most of what we do when we're born is instinctual, right? So
yeah.
Our brain gets filled up with information as we go. So the small thoughts are coming from somewhere. And so, you know, we want to be careful about where, what we let influence our brain. It's not a new concept.
And Byron Katie's been saying for quite a while that all our thoughts are recycled. Mm-hmm. So we think, like, we have this thought, like, I'm not good enough. Do you think you're the first person to have that thought?
Yeah.
These have been for tens of thousands of years. These thoughts are just being recycled. They're not anything, you know, mind-blowing or new.
Exactly. So, you know, I did an interview series with 20 big thinkers in conjunction with the launch of the book so that anybody who buys the book gets these interviews, these 30-minute interviews with 20 big thinkers, and Byron Katie is one of them.
Oh, wow.
You did a whole interview about the Think Big Code, and it was just wonderful. And if you know, folks go pick up a copy today of the Think Big Manifesto at thinkbigmanifesto.com, they get those interviews. And you can see, if you go over to that site, you can get a chance to look at who those interviews are with. We have Emmy Award winners, Grammy Award winners, NFL football players who are also entrepreneurs and humanitarians. We have CEOs, some of the some of the most successful businesses in the country. We have environmentalists. I mean, so many cool people doing all sorts of different things. Even a guy who's climbed 6 of the 7 tallest mountains in the world. So there's someone you. I was trying to get as many different people as someone for each everybody to relate to, because we're all into different things. And they all seem to follow this similar way of being, well, again, with different personalities, different interests, and even different worldviews. But they still seem to follow this code that I outline in the book. Very, very straightforward. I'm not trying to be tricky here or come up with something clever that nobody else has ever said before, but it's the context in which you take information and apply it that is so incredibly important. Right, so stand for something, or someone will stand on you. Overthrow the judges, right? Let's move away from the fraud factor. Collaborate, so trust everyone almost. Get comfort, so if the shoe pinches, it's promise and fulfill. Say you will and do. Big thinkers are very good at making commitments and fulfilling them. This is one of the most important and practical aspects of doing big things. You need to get things done. Submit to authority to be an authority. Live in integrity. Does it need to be said? Yes. Work hard. Develop your warrior core mentally, physically, intellectually. And yes, have fun. Stop waiting for Godot. You know the Samuel Beckett play? It's called Waiting for Godot. These two poor sats are waiting out in the desert for this character named Godot to show up before they do anything. And the whole play is about them sitting there waiting, and talking about what will happen when Godot shows up. Well, it is revolution time now, so stop waiting for Godot.
I think that's an amazing bonus, Michael. People have been, when books are offered, there's all these different promotions and whatever, but I love this, that people are going to get 20 interviews. I mean, this is stuff that you can put on your iPod, on your iPhone. You can listen to it in the car. You can listen to it while jogging, while meditating, so it's not going to take up any extra time. And I think that's an amazing bonus and huge value. I mean, the book alone, of course, is awesome, but that's a really creative offer. I love it.
It's great. Yeah,
so I do encourage you guys, if you're inclined and interested and tempted or passionate about thinking bigger in your life, then I encourage you to get a copy of the Think Big Manifesto, and that's at thinkbigmanifesto.com.
Yes, sir.
Do you follow your own advice?
I try my best. I try my best. You know, one of the things that I have the hardest time with is criticism. I find it very difficult. I'm actually, I seem like I have a sort of a big personality, and some days I do, but I'm actually very shy. So, I have a hard time, being very, very bold in public. But I think that I've sort of come to the conclusion that ultimately, if I'm going to do the work that I believe in and stand for what I believe in, I'm going to need to be pretty bold. And so sometimes, I let these small thoughts or even small thinkers, whack me, with some sticks. And I do let it affect me sometimes. But one of the reasons I wrote the manifesto is so that me and my son and you and all of us have something to be accountable to. Because if we adopt, this way of life, then we have no choice but to play big. I mean, if I wrote this book, I have to live into it. If you embrace this If you embrace thinking big, then you have to live into it. You don't have a choice. So I do the best job that I possibly can. I think out, you know, in front. I think I'm winning the battle against small thoughts. But I do think it's a daily struggle. I don't think you're sort of just, you know, boom, done one day and that's it. I think it's always a constant battle, and we've got to be vigilant.
Mm. I hear it. So it's a lifestyle.
It's absolutely. It's a way of being, you know, more than a lifestyle, I would say. And I think that if, again, when I interviewed all these folks, these people for this Think Big audio series, I found that they talked a lot about their way of being and how their way of being influenced the actions they took, which of course then influenced the results that they got. It's not a complicated model, but oftentimes we hyper-obsess, or we spend too much time looking at actions. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And it's good to look at what we're going to do. But if the things that we do are influenced in a negative way by our way of being, meaning the way we see the world or the way we see the situation, then the results we get are not going to be to our liking. And if we just keep doing more of the same, then of course, you know, we just do more of the same and get more of the same results. So the thing that for us to keep reflecting on is our way of being. And our way of being is influenced by the way that we see the different situations that we're in and our relation to them.
And I like how in the book you give a lot of support for looking at how we're being. On page 154, you say, "Laugh and the next mountain will crumble for you." Mm-hmm. And I tell you, that one line from your book just changed my whole day today, because I was feeling a bit of pressure and the weight, and like, how am I going to do all this? And just reading that, everything shifted, and I just thought, all right, I'm going to face this with humor.
Yeah, well, that's a, you know, that's a big part of the end of the book, is the section on having fun. And, you know, the world, it can be an absurd place. I mean, it really is. And if you think about it, it's hysterical. I mean, it's a very funny place. There's in the presentation that I give on Thinking Big, I put at the end this video clip from a comedian named Louis C.
Oh, yeah. Louis C. I love that clip.
Yeah, and it's a clip with him and Conan on the Conan Show, and he's talking about, you know, how the world is the most amazing place and everybody's miserable.
Yep.
And of course, he's a comedian.
It's amazing.
Nobody's about it. You know, he's like, look, we're sitting at looking at our cell phones, and we're sending a text to somebody, or sending an email to somebody, we're trying to get an email from somebody, and we're sitting there and screaming and bitching because it's taking 3 seconds. Where is this email? This is going so slowly. And he says, it's going to space and beyond. And we're complaining that it's taking 3 seconds, or, you know, or his whole thing about sitting on the airplane. He says, you know, you're sitting there bitching because you're like, I can't believe it. 45 minutes, I was on the tarmac, sitting on the airplane, and the flight took 2.5 hours, you know, and then by the time I got to my, you know, hotel and got out by the pool, it was a whole thing. He says, you're sitting in a chair on a plane flying through the air at light speed. It's amazing.
Yeah. No, he says it used to take you a lifetime to cross the U.S. Like, your family would be dead. You wouldn't even know the same people. It'd be a whole different people. And now you're like, you're sitting in a chair in the sky, and you're there going, it doesn't go back far enough.
Exactly.
I love it.
You're complaining because your seat doesn't go far enough. That's exactly
right. And true. You can bitch about not having something that 10 seconds ago you didn't even know existed.
I know.
And yeah, technology, man. It's like, damn it, my email doesn't work.
Right. Exactly. Oh, gosh, darn it, Twitter's down. You know, you didn't start using Twitter until 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I know, I was like, damn it.
Right. So, you know, you just kind of laugh at the absurdity of the whole thing, you know. Like, while we're on the phone, I glanced at the Amazon page to see where the book was, and it's number 30 in the world right now. And it's got a lot of good reviews because I sent out advanced copies and, you know, asked that if you like it, review it. And then a couple people who got it 2 days ago wrote some good reviews. And then one guy comes and writes this review, obviously didn't read it because you can tell from the review, and starts, you know, just talking about what, like, I'm the worst person in the world and blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, one of those sort of vitriolic, you know, I hate my life, so I'll just blame it on the guy who's, you know, on the top of the list today kind of thing. And when I look at that, at first it's upsetting. It's like, why does someone have to do that? We're just trying to do good things, you know? And then I think it's hysterical. If you actually read the words, you know, and like the name he makes up for himself, he makes up a fake name, and the whole thing is just absurd.
Yeah.
It's like hysterical, you know? What are you going to do about it? The world is a very funny place. So that's, you know, that's usually where we like to end up the whole conversation about, you know, thinking big, is that it's got to, we got to do it with lightness and grace and an open heart.
Well, that's a good note to conclude on. Is there anything else you want to say, or is that a good one to leave?
No, that's it. You know, just, you know, it's my honor to be of service in any way I can, and I hope you guys think big about who you are and what you offer the world, because you've got so much to offer.
Mm. Well, Michael, I love knowing you. I really do. I see you as a colleague and a friend, and I love what you're doing in the world. I love that you're motivating others to get in touch with their passion and go out and play. That's my mission as well.
Yeah, man.
And I encourage you guys, if this has touched you at all, to go to thinkbigmanifesto.com, get Michael's book, read it, and more importantly, apply it and start sharing this with others, because you are part of the Think Big revolution. We all are.
Yeah, I feel the same way about you, Dave. I think you're just a wonderful, wonderful guy, and I really appreciate knowing you.
Thanks, mate. Well, next time you're in San Francisco, look me up.
I will indeed, of course.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day and enjoy thinking big.